You're listening to Stand Out with Ian O'Connell, Wednesday evenings from 8 p.m. here on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. Before we start, I just want to say a massive thank you to all the messages and emails that you're sending me saying happy birthday and wishing me the best. I had a great day on Monday, so thanks a million to everyone for reaching out and showing the love. I really appreciate everyone that sent me a message or an email or any of the listeners that got on to me, so thanks a million for that. Now, one more thing before we finish up, I just want to say something on a personal level. Today, the 16th of August 2023, marks 6 years of me being in a wheelchair since my accident. 6 years, where did it go, huh? Only feels like yesterday I was out cycling with my friends in Mucker's house. But you know what? That's life. Like the song, that's what all the people say, that's life. I won't sing now or I'll get you, you'll be tuning out for me. 6 years though, where did it go? Can't say thank you enough to people that are listening here today. And I know a lot of my family and friends are listening and listeners all over the country and abroad are listening as well. So I just want to say a massive thanks to you and to everyone else, my work colleagues here in Radio Kerry. I just want to say thanks for always being there for me, everybody, for helping me, my colleagues here in Radio Kerry when I started. They were helping me, no problem, without me even asking. They were straight on to me, showing me the ropes when I first started off. I suppose I just want to say a massive thanks to the manager here, Fiona Stack. When I was lying in the ground that day after my accident, the first thought that came into my head was, I'll never get employed in a job while being in a wheelchair. But you know what? I proved myself wrong. I'm working here in Radio Kerry and I absolutely love it. It wouldn't have been something that I was going to do before my accident, but that's just life and that's what happens. I was brought down a totally different road and I'm now into radio. But like the quote says, my path might be different, but that doesn't mean I'm lost. And that's so true. 6 years ago today, it's crazy to think it was that long ago. Like I said, it only feels like yesterday. And the opportunities, the people I've met, the things I've achieved since my accident, I don't think I'd have achieved half the things that I've achieved now if it was before my accident. It's I know, obviously, I don't want to be in a wheelchair, but it's made me the man I am today, and it's made me prove to myself that I am strong enough, because when I was on the ventilator, like I said, I didn't know how strong I was until my only option was to be strong. So hopefully all of you out there appreciate life, and that every week I get across the message that life can change the blink of an eye, and I know it more than anybody. So appreciate all the things that you have, because I know how quickly it can change. So always appreciate the things you have now before they become the things you had. And that's all I'm going to say. Thank you to everybody for being there for me over the last 6 years. I appreciate every single one of you out there, whether we're friends, family, strangers on the street, anything. Thank you. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Stand Out with myself, Ian O'Connell, is Shane O'Sullivan. Shane is better known as the Kerry Cowboy. The world of TikTok is still quite a new one to many, but Shane is having a lot of fun educating people on the world of Irish farming and dog training, and he is keeping the Irish language very much alive. Sit back and enjoy the show. Well, fire away. So how's life with you? All good?
Very good, Ian. How are yourself?
All good, boy. All good, thanks. How's the weather in back where you're living?
Geez, you know, we had a horrible July altogether. It was such heavy rain, but things have picked up a small bit. So hopefully now the end of the summer will be somewhere nice. But we had a great start to the summer, but no, it turned off altogether.
People, I suppose, when we got a few days there, it was about a month or two ago, as we had a nice week, and that might be our summer. But hopefully, like you said, we get
could happen that way too. Do you know, there was a good start to Puck Fair down around where I'm from, but the last two evenings of it, then sure poured. But look, you can't divide it.
Where are you? Are you mid Kerry or whereabouts are you?
I'd be mid Kerry, yeah. That's where the farm is based.
Very good. Speaking of the farm, Joanna, just bring me back to paint a picture for the listeners. I always get my guests to paint, I suppose, give them an idea. What was your life growing up? And Joanna, bring us back.
Yeah, just I had a great childhood, to be honest. My grandparents have been very involved in my rearing, so I would have heard a lot of stories from them and all that. But I grew up on a dairy farm in Mid Kerry. We were all very involved in the farm, I suppose. My mother and father, we've my granduncle on the farm, we've a man employed, Mike, and my sister is great as well. So I had a great childhood, really. You know, a lot of outdoors. We were always around with horses and things like that. So, it was a very active kind of a childhood, I suppose. And Aaron, not too much has changed. I'm still involved in the farm. I know life's a small bit different now, but it still plays a big role in my life. And I'm very lucky to have a very tight-knit family unit at home.
Yeah, well, I'm saying very tight knit as well, and I suppose back where you're living to be the same where I'm living now. Everybody knows everyone, and everyone salutes everyone, do they?
That's it. You're all in each other's pockets, and that has ups and downs, I suppose. But I'm very lucky that I have great neighbors and friends and all that around, so we all get on fine.
Were you into any sports growing up?
I would have been, yeah. So in school, we would have been very active, with the basketball and football and all these things. But I suppose I mostly would have been involved in rowing and the horse riding. I went on to do hunting later on, but when I was younger, I would have started off jumping horses and just riding them around the place. I had fierce interest in them. But I suppose at the same time, grew up on a farm, there's always something happening. So you were kind of always busy at something. There was no hanging around. But at the time, I might have thought, geez, we have so much to do compared to other kids. But I can see now that that taught me a lot of life lessons, and it's really stood to me. So I was very lucky with the rearing I got.
Was what were your, like you said there, growing up with around the farm with horses and that kind of side of things, been your very first core memory?
I suppose so, yeah. I can remember, I suppose one of my first memories, I was about 3 years old and the farm was just transitioning from my grandfather to my father. And I was mad to go over and see these cows that were eating silage in the shade. And we had a very smart cattle dog at the time, Pedro, his name was. And I can just remember him trying to keep me away from him. He was trying to steer me out because sure he knew well that they were dangerous, but 3-year-old Shane had no clue anyway. He was mad to go over to the cows. But I suppose that'd be one of my earliest memories, and that's right, it'd be to do with the farm. So I suppose it was all fitty forty, as they say in Irish, it was all linked into my growing up,
And like you said, your grandparents were very involved. Was the farming kind of started with their generation? Would they have grown up on a farm?
It would have, yeah. So my grandfather would have grown up on a farm just south of Beaufort, and he actually went over work in England in the late 1940s, and he made enough money anyway to buy a farm at home, and he started off here, one tractor and a couple of fields, and it's just been building on since then. But my father's done a lot of expansion, and he's put in a lot of hard work and hours to make it the farm it is today. Well, my mother as well, of course, can't leave her out. But yeah, it's been in the family now for this. I'd be the third generation, we'll say, so a small bit now.
And would it all have been, like you said, dairy? Did you have any crops or anything?
So he would have grown barley towards the start, but that's much less common in Kerry now. It is nearly all livestock people that have. But he actually started off with pigs before he got into milking cows. He had a piggery here, but I suppose the pig prices started to fall and the milk was growing. So it was kind of a logical decision, I suppose, to move over to dairy. But he would have had 20 cows, and my parents now have grown it up to 90 cows. So still a modest enough farm, but it was a good growth, I suppose, in that couple of years.
I'll touch on it there in a couple of minutes, but you're obviously, for the people that follow you on online, and you've done a lot with TG Carr, Irish is I suppose a big part of your life as well. And like I said, we'll touch on that in a minute. But did you go to you went to Mary Immaculate, did you, studying Irish?
I did, yeah. So I suppose in school, I was good enough at school, but I hadn't that much interest. I can't honestly say I did too much work at school, But towards the end of it anyway, the guidance counselor was kind of saying to me, Shane, you speak Irish, you're good with young people, the best thing for you to do now, because dad is very young, I couldn't just go off farm or anything. The best thing you could do is to go teaching. So there was a course being offered by Mary Immaculate College. They had a new campus opened in Thurles for secondary school teachers. So I decided to go studying Irish business and education. So I qualified as a teacher and I actually spent a year teaching inside in Tralee in the Gaelic Loch. I had a great year, fantastic school.
Do you think you'll ever go back to it?
You never know. I suppose I'm kind of doing different endeavors now, but I'd still be involved in teaching. Do you know, this summer now I was back in West Kerry in the Gaeltacht as a principal, just on those summer courses, and I really enjoyed it. I think it'll always be part of what I'm doing is educating and working with young people, but I suppose the role has kind of turned out a bit different than I imagined first.
And like you said there, you're back the Irish colleges, and I know my friends, they'd always have went to them in the summer holidays when we were in school as well. How important do you think that them, I suppose, them kind of summer colleges for Irish are to keep the language alive?
I think they're great for keeping the language alive, but not only that, to give people that probably would never have heard Irish spoken naturally the chance to get to know their own country's language. You know, people come from all over the east of Ireland and the Midlands and all that that would have only ever heard Irish in school. And I think that it's a great opportunity for them to see Irish as a living language and to get to experience the life in the West Coast. And I think that inspires a lot of pride in them in their own language. That's what we aim to do anyway. But it does seem to work half the time. They kind of come first and they've no interest in speaking Irish and they're very rebellious, we'll say. But as time kind of goes on, they see the value in it and you'll hear them then speak Irish to each other, even going home on the bus, which would really lift your heart. You know, you kind of feel you've done something then. But definitely for Irish as well, it brings more industry, it brings more tourism to the Gaeltacht areas. But yeah, it gives a lot of people, I suppose, that it's their first contact with the language and they might go on to study Irish or do more things with Irish. So they're vital, really.
It's great to see it staying alive, you know, for it's such a big part of, I suppose, our culture in Ireland. When you were in Mary Immaculate, did you do any, I suppose, that age kind of growing up and stuff? A lot of people did go to college and work in the weekend. Did you ever have like a summer job after college, or were you always just on the farm?
Yeah, no, I was nearly always working. I was always trying to make my own bit of money. And then whenever I had any spare time, I'd be helping at home. But throughout college, I was coming home nearly every weekend and the holidays. I was working first with Lee Strand on the milk
What?
trucks. And after that, then I was working with Kerry Agribusiness, driving a forklift and, you know, lifting out bags to farmers and things like that. So I was always kind of working away. But even up in college then, there'd be horse racing on. And I had experience from when I was finishing secondary school, I was working in a bar at the weekends. So I had that experience as well. So I was well able to make a few bob anyway. But a couple of different jobs going at the same time, yeah. But I suppose my parents were very good. They supported me throughout college. But I always wanted to kind of have my own money to make my own way. So I had a good work ethic, I suppose, from a young age. And maybe that comes from the farming background. But it had stood to me anyway, but yeah, I had a great time between studying and working. I was always busy.
I know I'm the same. I always think that it's vital for someone of that age to have a kind of a job to do their own thing. Like I was working in the Killarney Park Hotel here in Killarney, and even I suppose now that I'm gone on the road of radio, like I'd never have done that. But working in that hotel, you know, I suppose communicating with people, that's after standing to me now in the work I'm doing today. We'll move on now to the recent time, I suppose, side of things on TikTok. You're obviously after blown up, and you've I love your TikToks, and it's great to see behind the scenes. Do you want to just paint a picture for the listeners? I know that you said on and off, I was with the two Johnnies, you said it all kind of started with the dog Brandy. Do you want to just how did you, I suppose, start off on TikTok? Would it have been something that you'd have been into before you did blow up, or did it just happen overnight?
Yeah, it's just funny, Ian. Even if you ask my mother now, she always says, geez, he never looked at a phone until TikTok started. I hadn't any interest really in technology or the media or anything like that. It started with COVID. I was still studying online, but sure, I was at home the whole time. And I, in fairness, Kerry Agribusiness kept me employed, but I still had a lot of free time. So I decided for myself that I'd get a sheepdog pup. and train her up, that she'd make life very handy for me then in the winter. But what I didn't expect anyway was my sister suggested that I take videos of training her and that they do very well online. And I decided anyway that we put them up on TikTok and they did very well altogether. Do you know, the first kind of video I had of her doing any bit of work, she was only 13 weeks old. And when I woke up the next morning, 50,000 people had watched it. And within the week, then 1.5 million watched it. So I suppose that kind of started the trajectory then. I just carried on making videos about training the dog, Randy, about farming, Irish culture, all kinds of different things. And that's kind of what started off then.
I don't know, I was reading up in an article there. I don't know, was it with some farming article? I don't know who it was, which was the Farmer's Journal or something. You said that you planned on getting a boy and naming it after Fionn McCool's hound.
That's how it started. Yeah, I planned on getting a boy first, but there was seven pups there. And they're only 6 weeks at this age, but I was looking at them and I just thought this girl looked way sharper than any of them. You know, there was a couple of boys there that were eating their own tail or rolling over or whatever, but she was watching me tight. So I said to myself, this dog anyway, she's cop on. So instead of Bran, I decided to call her Brandy.
Brandy, same
Yeah.
kind of started letter. How did the name then on TikTok, the Kerry Cowboy, how did that come apart? Because even when I didn't ask you to do this interview and I'd be watching, I always wondered how did that name come about?
Yeah, I suppose it's kind of a nickname, and people can take it up wrong. They can think that I'm a shady character, but I don't think that's what they meant by cowboy.
Bad carton.
I suppose just being involved with horses from a very young age, you know, that among my friends, I would have got that nickname. And sure, when I was picking a name for TikTok, then I thought it kind of made sense, the Kerry Cowboy. And it turned out to be a lot catchier than Shane O'Sullivan. Nearly everyone I meet wouldn't know my real name, but they'd just say, oh, that's the Kerry Cowboy. So. It was a good name to pick, I suppose, but it summed up what I was doing, you know, Irish culture and at the same time agriculture and the scenery here in Kerry. It's almost all my content encapsulated in one name. So I think it was the right choice.
Did obviously TikTok, but did you before you went on TikTok because the platforms are changing ever so quickly, did you ever put videos or anything up on Facebook or Snapchat or anything?
No, it started off with TikTok, and I kind of moved on to other things. Then I moved on to Instagram, but I actually don't have Snapchat at all, and I would have had it growing up, but I just said I had too many apps on the phone, and they could be so time draining. So I deleted Facebook, I deleted Snapchat, and a couple of other things, and all I have now is Instagram and TikTok.
And obviously, social media, it can be, and I say it to a lot of people on my show here whenever they come on, it can either be the best thing in the world or it can be the worst thing in the world because we see so many things that time there. Caroline Flack, you know, the one that Love Island and stuff. And even myself there, I get loads of nice comments and I'm sure you do too. Have you received any kind of negative comments? And I could probably answer it for yourself, because I know I do, but if you put yourself out there, have you had any experiences?
Oh, non-stop. But you know, like you say, and that's something you have to be expecting nearly, you know. Even I did an ad recently and geez, the comments were very offensive altogether. The company even got onto me. They're like, how do you handle listening to this? But they're just kind of in one ear and out the other ear, you know. These are people that are at home, you don't know what they're doing with themselves, you know, that they have the time and the energy to leave comments about you. But Eric, you couldn't be taking things like that personally, you know? And like you say, with social media, I suppose nearly everyone in the world is consuming it now the whole time. So the decision I made was if I'm going to be on the phone, I might as well get something out of it and, you know, benefit myself with it. So that's how I look at it. I wouldn't take things like that personally, really, at all. I see it that I put things out there. People are going to react the way they're going to react. But the difference is, I suppose, you know, 10 or 20 years ago, if you were writing in a newspaper, if you were making a television show, you weren't accessing people's opinions so quickly. And I think it can really get in people's heads that we have such fast access to what they're saying about me, what they're thinking, and it's constant. There's no escaping it. So I think if I was to be stuck in comment sections, I probably wouldn't be getting on great with my mental health. So I distance myself from that really. I try to take the positives and, you know, I take them with a pinch of salt too, because these people don't really know you. But I value the opinions of people that are in my life, you know, people that are my friends, my family. People who know the real me. But that'd be my advice anyway for anyone out there that's dealing with that kind of comments online. And people can be horrible, but you just can't take it to heart. You know, there are people that don't know you and they don't know what you're about.
Absolutely, very well said. And it can, like you were saying there, it for anybody that is getting hate online, you know, if you put yourself out there, you must kind of expect it in one way. Did you, when you were going online, did you have any at the very, very start, were you, because I know when I started on my Instagram, I was reluctant to kind of go and talk with my face on it. At the very start, when you were videoing yourself, did you have any, I suppose, were you ever self-conscious about putting your picture of your face out?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. No, nobody's ever asked me that. But I suppose starting off when the numbers weren't so big, I didn't take much notice. But then it kind of rapidly grew and you start getting a bit self-conscious, you know? And even now on Instagram, the odd time, unless I have something proper to say, I feel kind of strange holding out the phone and just talking to myself, you know? But I suppose it's something you have to overcome. And, you know, if people are following you, you obviously have a message that's worth spreading, you know, people are listening to you. So you kind of have to overcome that, all right? But definitely in public, it can be kind of shameful taking these selfie videos and chatting to a camera. You know, it's a bit easier out in the farm because there's nobody watching, only a couple of cows and a dog. But yeah, I do find at events now and in the town, I still would be a bit self-conscious about doing that. But sure, look, what harm? No, you know, everybody's living their own life. You kind of have to get on with it.
Exactly. Do you know this is from Kimmare, do you know Buff Egan, the hurling fella?
Oh, I've seen his stuff, yeah.
I don't know how he does he the phone out in the middle of the street, he's gas, but I couldn't be only out in the middle of the street, loads of people, do you know, looking at me.
I know, yeah. But look, it takes a bit of courage. And, you know, it's a great skill not to be too worried about what people think as well. You know, it's something that I'm still actively learning myself, I suppose. But, no, Buff is well able. He's not too worried about anyone's opinion.
No, then I'm the same. I'd be kind of, not that I'm want to keep myself off, but I'd be kind of, I suppose, not shy, but putting videos of me talking on my story. Do you think that the fact that you do put yourself out there, video yourself talking, because I think it does whenever I do, does it make your, I suppose, followers feel closer to you, that they're not just hearing a voice, that they're actually seeing you in the video?
Yeah, I think a lot of people using social media are looking for that personal connection because we've moved into a very technological world where we're not meeting people the same amount and we're not speaking to them. So I do think that it would drive up your engagement and it helps people to connect with you if your face is there, if you're a human being. Whereas a lot of my videos, a lot of the time, I'm just looking at scenery or I'm looking at cows. You know, I'm not visible. And I do feel that people engage better when there is a human being on the other side of the phone. You know, they listen better and they want to watch more, I do find.
It is, it's a way more I'm kind of a personal connection. How many followers are you up to now?
Yeah, there's two or three there anyway, I suppose. I don't
Do
know, I don't watch it too tight to be honest with you, but there's around 200,000 on TikTok and around 20,000 on Instagram. So
That's
it's
unreal.
all right, I suppose.
It is, it's unreal. Do you ever look at the, I suppose, the analytics and engagement of what areas your following is from, because on my Instagram I've people, most of mine are Ireland and America and a few in Australia. Did you ever check what countries your followers are from?
Yeah, up till before Christmas, I would have been watching tight on, you know, the analytics and seeing what kind of videos are doing well and trying to do more of that. But
It
I
is.
know you'd nearly get a headache from that. But I suppose the last time I checked the analytics anyway, the TikTok was very strongly an American audience, with a good bit of Ireland as well, the same as yourself. But my Instagram be about 90% Ireland, I'd say. There's nearly nothing outside of Ireland on Instagram. But so it's interesting that the two apps are kind of different, that there's different audiences there. But again, I'd say if I was stuck in numbers, I'd never get anything done, you know?
Exactly, it's all taken your stride. What numbers did your family, when you started putting yourself out there, what was their reaction when they seen how big you were getting?
Which is funny because neither of my parents would be very involved in social media at all. So when it kind of first took off during COVID, they didn't really take any notice because the numbers didn't mean anything. But I suppose it started becoming real when they were going out in the world again and people are saying, oh, geez, Shane's doing very well, or I love the Kerry Cowboys videos and this kind of thing, you know? they're like, geez, there is something happening here. And what happened was they wanted to start watching back older videos I had then see what was I putting out. They couldn't care less before. But they're interested enough now, right? They'd be keeping an eye on me. But they're great. They've been very supportive because I think a lot of families could, you know, want to hold you back from that. You know, they wouldn't want you to enter into that world. But they have faith in me and they've supported me really well to go out and do it.
And that's all that matters. What are you like with the editing side of things? Because I know TikTok is good enough. It's kind of basic. But what are you like with that side of things, editing the videos and putting them together?
Yeah, I wouldn't have much clue, to be honest, Dean. If you look at my videos, most of them are fairly raw. You know, there's not much work done in them. But if I do use any filters or anything like that, it probably took me half an hour. So I wouldn't be much of a wizard at all that way yet. And I should be a lot better with the number of years now I've been on social media. But I think that I've always strived more to go with authenticity and being the real deal rather than, you know, having fancy editing and filters to draw people in, you know. And it's worked for me so far. I've been very lucky, but I should improve because you'd see some videos and people have done amazing work on them to put them together. I don't know how they do it with the different captions and transitions and all this, you know. It is very fancy, but I should work on that really now. It'd be my next thing, but up till now, it's kind of worked away from me just taking a video on the phone and not changing much, just kind of throwing it straight up.
Well, we'll come back to the farm sightings in a second. I want to just talk to you about your and the Irish there that we were speaking about at the start. You had a program there on TG Car, I believe, with two or three other people. You were traveling kind of around the world. Do you want to talk to me about that?
That's right, yeah. I was very lucky to get that opportunity now from McCalla. They're a production company up in Dublin. A lady called Maria Tucker called me when I was still teaching and she asked if I had any interest in traveling around Europe making a television show. I said, sure, that sounds amazing, but I hadn't a clue about traveling. I said, I don't think I'm the right man for the job at all. Sure, I'd only been on a school tour to Germany once. Other than that, I hadn't seen the world at all. And she said, you're perfect. That's exactly what we want. So myself and Louise Cantillon from Limerick and Pontius O'Quinn from Armagh went traveling around Europe. We got this great chance with this show Tapes Tashtel that went out in TG Car. It is still on the player if people want to go back and watch that. But geez, we had a great time and saw a lot of the world. It was an interesting premise of a show because it was all based on our social media following. So we'd go abroad and we'd try and use the social media to complete these different challenges, you know. For example, one time I had to get a selfie with 20 Irish people, so I had to try and gather them together. And, you know, there are different challenges like that. So it was an interesting show. And we were very lucky that we got to record a second season that hasn't come out yet. It'll be coming out in the near future. But I've just been blessed with opportunities with the television as well. I did another show for TG Car called Mafatha, where I was traveling around Ireland talking to young people about the pets they have. So, of course, of my interest in animals, that was right up my street. But, I had a great time. And, you know, I'm hoping that I'll get to do more television stuff. I really enjoy it. And I don't have much fear of the camera for some reason. For a man that didn't have any training or experience, I don't mind it too much, a camera being stuck in my face. So hopefully I get more things like that now. But I've really enjoyed it so far.
Louise Cantillon and Shane, she's to the FM. Is she Declan Hannan's girlfriend?
That's right, yeah. The fiancé.
Fiancé.
Yeah. So Louise is a savage crack. She used to be on Spin Southwest, and like you say now, she's gone massive on to the FM. She's a tough lady, you know. You wouldn't think it to look at her. I said that to her. But she's well able to get on abroad and well able to look after herself, you know. We'd savage crack, and I've made friends for life. I was really delighted with that series. And sure, look, we'll see how season two goes with the audience, but we really enjoyed it anyway.
Have you what advances in from when you were growing up on the farm to today? Have you seen a massive increase in technology, like be it machinery or other kind of things? Do you think that's the way that farming is going? The less kind of man labor is going out of it, that technology is getting so good?
I'm sure it's changed massively over the last couple of years, and it's only changing more, you know. Like when my grandfather was young, people would have been cutting grass with a scythe and making cocks of hay, you know. And we moved on from that to small balers and then wrapping them and this kind of crack. But technology is always growing in the agricultural sector, of course. Or you have things like Lele now, where the farmer doesn't even need to be there for the cows to be milked, you know, and this kind of thing. I think it'll always need human supervision, but we are approaching the day that the silage will cut itself almost, you know. You're going to see a lot of labor reduction in the farming sector, but of course the machinery and the updates are very expensive, you know. It's not every farmer that could afford to keep up with that. But we're definitely seeing a big difference in the technology, and even the breeding nowadays with artificial insemination, you know, farmers are so careful now about the genetics of their animals to give them the best chance to be healthy and to be productive. You know, we're always looking to improve, I suppose, but it's amazing how rapidly technology moves on and how practices change, you know?
It is. It's scary to see what way technology is going, especially with all that AI crack at the moment.
Well, I was talking AI, artificial insemination, rather than artificial intelligence, but that is scary, yeah, almost, you know, that the way that the computers are thinking for themselves and they're sharper than ourselves, you know? But we'll have to see how that ends up.
It's frightening. Do you view farming more as a business or a lifestyle?
Farming is life, you know. There's nobody that gets into farming. I see my own parents here to make money, you know. You're not going to get rich or get a fancy lifestyle traveling around in a cruise ship or anything out of farming, you know. It's a commitment, and anything you make goes back into the farm, you know. And I always say that it's not a job, it's a life, because if you have a job, you have a set number of hours, you know, and you can go home from it. Whereas they're always thinking, there's always something happening here, you know? And it's just a commitment. It's a lifestyle more so than a career.
What do you think the most satisfying part of farming is?
I myself am more into the animals, you know. My father and my sister now would be big into machinery, so you'd have to ask them what they think. But I personally think when calves are born and they come out healthy, that's kind of the biggest moment of satisfaction, because there's all this build up to the calving moment. So when you see them coming on strong and eventually going out into grass, you know, that's kind of the most satisfying of all, because the work you put in has come out right, you know.
Dylan, like you said, farming, it's not a 9-to-5 job. Do you like the part? Because I know I like kind of, I suppose, working under pressure. Do you like the part that, like you said, calving, that if you have to get up in the middle of the night, go down very quick and do whatever has to be done? Do you like that side of things, working under the pressure?
Yeah, it can be tough, but I suppose pressure's a great motivator. But sure, I have a very lackadaisy life now, traveling around the TG car. You know, I'd help out when I'm home, but you know, I wouldn't be the main person on the farm. It'd be my parents really, and my sister and all them doing most of it. But I can tell you now that after a couple of weeks of them getting up early in the morning and late in the night to be pulling calves, they wouldn't tell you that they enjoy the pressure too much. But it's all part of it, you know, and it's a very natural way of life to be so connected to the land and to the animals and all that. You know, it's fantastic, really.
How old is Brandy now, the dog, Shane?
Brandy is 3 years old now, and she is great. She recently brought a litter of pups into the world, and thanks be to God, they came on strong and healthy, and we were delighted with them. And they've all gone off to different farms now around the country.
Just before we finish up there, a couple of minutes. How, I suppose, training a dog from such a young age like Brandy, how do you start off training a dog for working, you know, herding up sheep and stuff? Do you start with like simple commands, or how do you go about it?
Oh, you keep it simple, yeah. So the first thing they learn is their name, really. And then to come back to you, we say heel up. That's vital. And you move on from that then to sit and lie down and these kind of things. And all that happens before they're ever in contact with cattle at all, you know, because a big mistake that people make is they buy a sheepdog or a cattle dog, and they leave them off one day when they're 6 months old, and they say, right, off you go. Because all that happens then is they chase them around the place and they don't have a clue what they're at, you know. There's a lot of preparation that goes into that before they ever move any animals. So lie down would be a big one, definitely, because it's very easy to find a dog that'll go, hard to find a dog that'll stop. Breaks are very important, especially when dealing with animals like sheep, because they can be very nervous. So that's what you'd start off with, the basics that you do for any dog, but they're just vital. The difference is, you know, if you have a Labrador, if you have a Yorkshire Terrier that won't sit, oh no, they didn't sit. But if you've got a colleague that's not working, they won't lie down for you. Your big issue there, you know. There's a lot depending on them, but they're very intelligent dogs. And I suppose another thing is that people can try to push them into situations they're not ready for, or that they don't want to be in. Like, it's not every collie that has the herding instinct, you know. Some of them just turn out to be pits and they're lovely dogs, but they just don't have that drive in them to move animals. But I was very lucky with Brandy. She showed promise from a very young age, and she's been great since. And even it's amazing to see it in the Duchess biome, you know. Some of the pups even are already showing interest. Like, they're 12 weeks now, and I've got a video from a fella in Limerick. He's a 300 cow herd, and the puppy is following the cows up the road already, you know. It's just kind of in them, but it's very important then that they get the training to manage it correctly, you know, that they kind of know what's right and what's wrong from a young age.
That was the next question about the pups. You know what video I loved on your TikTok was you did you break your arm or your ankle or something before, and when you came home from hospital, Brandy was there, and when she came up, she was so gentle as if she knew something was wrong.
Yeah, they're very intuitive like that. Yeah, I was in an accident that was 2 years ago now, but she was very careful with me after that, and she played a big role in my recovery. She was very good to come out with me when I was going on walks and trying to do squats and things to get strong, you know. She's a great companion dog. They actually call border collies, they call them a Velcro dog, because they love to be stuck onto their owner. They want to be with you the whole time. So that was the longest that she'd been away from me. I didn't see her for 10 days. So she'd fear separation anxiety. And when I was back again then, even though she was so excited, she was so gentle with me, you know. She's great.
When you are, say, on your recovery and things like that, or even just today when you want to wind down, because like you said, it's always on the go at a farm. How would you like to, I suppose, to chill out, or not even just to lie down on the couch? Is it, do you like going out for a walk in the mountains or the scenery? How would you like to wind down?
Yeah, well, I have a very bad habit, and I actually started last night trying to get out of it, which is before I go to sleep, same as everyone, scrolling on TikTok, scrolling on Instagram. So I made a new rule for myself now last night. I'm hoping I'll stick to it, to keep the phone out of the bedroom. When you go to bed, I don't care if I read a book or what, but just this scrolling crack has to stop. But I suppose during the day, yeah, if I get any chance, I love going up mountains. I love swimming in the sea. When I was recovering, I went swimming in the sea every day for a year, and I felt it did me great. But you know, the thing is to get the time for that. But if I ever have a day off, I love going up one of the mountains in Killarney or one of the Reeks, you know, and then maybe go for a swim in a nearby beach, Ross Bay or Cremorne or something. And I think it's great for the body, great for the head. So I like to do that when I get the chance. But you know, the summer's been so flat out now that I've barely gotten the chance. But hopefully now things will cool down a bit now with the August, with the autumn. And yeah, I'll get a couple of chances to do that.
Please God. Come here. Thanks so much now for coming on today. I really appreciate your time. And like you said, TG Car, there's another thing coming out there whenever. Is there any other things that you have coming up or any goals you want to work towards?
There are people have to keep an eye out, you know. People always ask me what's the goal, but I have no clue what I'd be doing in 5 years, you know. But as long as I'm doing a bit of the media stuff and, you know, connected with the land here, I'll be happy out. So if people want to keep up, they can follow me on Instagram and TikTok at Kerry Cowboy.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for your time now, and all the best, all right?
Pleasure speaking to you, Ian. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Stand Out with Ian O'Connell, Wednesday evenings from 8 p.m. here on Radio Kerry.